This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Hello, hello. Are we there yet? So, good evening, gentle persons, minions of ultimate evil and tentacled beings from beyond the stars. Welcome to another Bristol Confringe. Those of you who have turned up to see Stephanie Burgess, I'm sorry to report that she's not here. She's been dragged away by her evil publishers to eat tea and cake, or something along those lines, which sounds to me like terrible, terrible torture that writers really shouldn't be subjected to, but there you go.
She did say that she would like to come back at some other point.
Yes. Yes, yes. Jo says that she will come back and do Fringe for us at some other point when she's not so easily distracted. However, we do have a fabulous replacement for Stephanie. We have a gentleman who always makes me look dowdy and underdressed. So you please welcome to Bristol Confringe, Mr. Tom Parker.
Hello, hello. Yes, as a replacement, I only live literally around the corner, so it's just like I'm the localist writer that performs here. So I'll be reading some stories from my new collection of horror called Things That May Scare You, and this story is called The Curse of Anansi. I was bored. I looked at the clock on the wall to see that only 35 minutes had passed, but it felt like I'd spent my entire evening stuck in that room. I'd gone to an evening lecture at the local community centre. The lecture was called The Origins of Creativity, and I thought it would be an insightful talk on creative inspiration. However, I was completely wrong. What I was actually subjected to was an elderly speaker wittering on about some West African god called Anansi. Now, unfortunately, I have no interest in spirituality, but I felt it rude to walk out in the middle, so I was politely waiting for it to end. The speaker had a long white beard, wore ethnic, mystic-looking robes, and had a wistful voice. It was hard to take him seriously. He looked like Dumbledore. But it wasn't just the way he looked, it was the absolute drivel that he was spouting as well. He was talking about the power of words, language and text, how they're all ways of imparting knowledge and were one of the reasons that humans have the edge over all other animals. He explained that stories were a core part of how we understand things and make sense of the world. And, as the only animals that are able to create fiction, we have the unique ability to understand life beyond ourselves. But where did this power to create stories come from? He asked. Could it be a supernatural influence? The answer to this question, according to the speaker, was yes. He said that all stories belong to a god who was called Anansi, and it was this god who chose which people would become storytellers. Apparently it was a great honour to be chosen, but those that did not accept the gift they had been given, or did not take their role seriously enough, would soon lose that gift and struggle to finish stories in the future. The speaker told the audience that if they wanted to be writers, then the best way was to receive inspiration was to pray to Anansi. Faith was the key to success. I must confess, I phased out for a bit at this point. Philosophy can be very interesting, but this was just nonsense. The idea that we don't have control over what we create was a load of crap. I'd studied the mechanics of storytelling, and I'd studied grammar and language, and I'd gone out into the wider world and experienced life. That was inspiration, not some god who spoke to us in our sleep. Fiction is a commentary on our lives. I get that. I've seen how genre fiction uses metaphor to comment on some aspect of society. I've seen how contemporary fiction examines the human condition. I've also seen how literary fiction is just a pretentious blend of both, but with longer words and a massive marketing campaign to try and win awards. Writing isn't rocket science. It's just tedious typing with a bit of effort. Yes, the aim is to create something unique and noteworthy, but it also has to be entertaining enough to bring in royalties. The last thing it is, however, is a bunch of religious fanatics churning out the random thoughts of some metaphysical being. When the speaker finally finished, he opened the floor to questions, of which there were many. An audience member asked what happened to those who did not believe in any god, as there were plenty of successful atheist writers. The speaker nodded and smiled. "Anansi rewards those that deserve it," he said. "Those that are humble, those that give thanks, and those that are disciplined shall reap the rewards. Those that are arrogant, those that are ungrateful, and those who lack discipline will never be successful with a career in stories." Now this was complete tosh as far as I was concerned. New Age spiritualist rubbish for those who stretch their imagination just a bit too far. I couldn't help myself. Before I knew it, I was on my feet and addressed the crowd. "Kind and hard working triumphs over lazy and horrible," I cried out. That's not a religious theory. That's just common sense spun through a web of bollocks. Anyway, it's far more idealistic than practical. I looked around. The audience stared back. Clearly, I was on my own with this opinion, and my outburst had not been appreciated. I turned towards the speaker and saw that he was studying me with a face that was stern, but not angry. He cleared his throat loudly before responding. Those that renounce Anansi risk the wrath of a god. It is one thing to be unaware of his existence, but it is quite another to reject it entirely. He turned away from me and faced the crowd before continuing. Anansi does not enforce rules upon those who believe in him, for Anansi is a trickster god. However, he does desire respect and gratitude. Those that dismiss Anansi, those that are not thankful when he has given them inspiration, are treading a very dangerous path. So why inform people of Anansi if they're in less danger when they were ignorant? I retorted, unable to help myself. Because Anansi is growing in power, the speaker said. Anansi exists because stories exist, and by creating stories, we recreate Anansi over and over again in a thousand different ways. I know that as I stand here, surrounded by storytellers and lovers of stories, that strength of creation is magnified. Many of you may feel inspired to write this evening. That is the power of Anansi, and this is his church. I know that with all this creative energy, you will all begin to feel a presence as soon as I say the words, Anansi is in this room right now. I can't really describe what happened next, but the air in the room changed. There was a palpable tension which was undeniable, and the room fell silent. There was a sense that someone, or something, had entered the room, but all the doors and windows remained closed. The elderly speaker seemed to acknowledge this change with a slight nod before he spoke again. Anansi has arrived, he said, and there were audible gasps from some of the audience. Now some of you may see or sense him, but don't be alarmed. He honours us with his presence, he continued. For those that see him, Anansi may not come in human form, but this is completely normal. In fact, he is most commonly seen as something else, a creature that is small yet powerful, fragile, but able to command fear and respect. Anansi usually manifests itself as a spider. There was a murmur across the crowd as people whispered to each other what they thought they could see or feel. Then a scream cut through the noise from a seat near the back. Someone had found a spider beneath their chair. The audience gasped, but the speaker, strangely, just laughed. In the confusion, he explained that Anansi had chosen this person to write his next story, and then the speaker began to clap. There was a pause, and then there was laughter. The tension had been broken as the audience rose to their feet and joined the applause. The lecture was concluded. I walked home alone that night and went to bed without company. The house was quiet and I was very tired, but I did not go to sleep straight away. Thoughts of the evening still drifted through my mind. The speaker was deluded. I was sure of it, but despite the craziness of the concept, I could not deny that I'd felt something when he'd said, Anansi is in this room right now. But what was it? There was no sudden draft, no door slamming shut. Yet there was definitely a change the moment it was said. It must have been some kind of parlour trick, the power of suggestion or something, but still the thought lingered like an unwanted guest. What if it's true? I felt I needed some distraction, so decided to read in an effort to clear my mind. I reached over and switched on the bedside light as I went to pick up my book, but then stopped. Frozen, in mid-motion, I stared at a small shadow on the wall just a few inches from my hand. It was a spider. It wasn't especially large, but it certainly wasn't small, and it just hung there, motionless, a foot away. A chill passed through me and my skin turned to goose flesh. One thought came to the forefront of my mind, a single word imprinted on my consciousness. Anansi. I felt fear rush through my system. It was irrational, ridiculous, just an overactive imagination, that's all. But my heart was beating faster. Meanwhile, the spider did not move. I leant back and tried to focus on my book, keeping the spider in my peripheral vision just in case, but still, the spider did not move. I skimmed over the same page a few times, paragraph after paragraph, but nothing was going in. I soon realised the issue of the spider had to be addressed. I fetched a glass and a coaster from the kitchen, hoping I wouldn't have to touch this creature, and meanwhile, the spider did not move. In the end, I had to coax it into the glass with the coaster, and soon it was captured, carried, and released out of the window into the wild. I let out a sigh of relief. It was silly. It was one of those moments where I felt like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. I returned to bed, picked up my book, and slowly settled down. House spiders are ridiculously common, especially at this time of year. The speaker must have known that. I smiled and wondered how many others were having a similar experience after the lecture that evening. Soon there was quiet, just the gentle sound of my breathing and the faint tick-tock of the clock on the wall. It was a quarter of an hour before I noticed a tickling sensation in the toes of my right foot. It was an odd sensation. Not quite an itch, but a very faint irritation that wouldn't go away. I rubbed my feet together, but it only brought momentary relief, and soon the sensation returned. Reluctantly, I pulled back the duvet to see if there was anything in the bed. And there was. Dozens of tiny spider babies, each only a few millimetres long, were crawling all over my feet. I kicked them away and leapt out onto the floor. I began scraping the spiders off the sheets, stamping on them and crushing them with the flat of my book. Soon the majority seemed to have gone, but I vacuumed the floor, changed the sheets and showered, just to be certain. Was this some kind of practical joke, I thought? But who would do this? And how? And why? It had to be a coincidence. Just a stupid and terrifying coincidence. I lay back down. I was so angry at myself at this irrational fear and frustrated at the adrenaline still pumping through my veins. I needed sleep, but my body was on high alert. Tears became the only release. Soon, hot and salty tears stung my eyes and filled my nose to create a snotty, blubbering mess. I shook and trembled and curled into the fetal position. It wasn't real, I told myself. And Nancy isn't real. Sometime later, I woke up to find myself in the pitch blackness of night. The adrenaline had finally left my system and my body was still sluggish from sleep. But my mind was active and wide awake. With some effort, I managed to roll onto my back and take in my surroundings. I wasn't thirsty, and I didn't need the bathroom, so I was confused as to why I'd woken up. The pillow was slightly damp with the residue of my sweat and tears, but my skin wasn't clammy. I strained my ears to see if there may have been a noise, and that's when I became aware of the faint rustling sound. It was coming from the roof. It was like someone treading on dry leaves, but it was coming from above. It was strange rather than scary. A familiar sound, but in the wrong place. I switched on my bedside light, but my eyes were not ready for it, and I was forced to close them. I put my hands to my eyes and rubbed, then moved them away as I slowly became accustomed to the light. I looked up. I was confronted with a shimmering black mass that covered the ceiling. I gasped as I realised that it was the source of the noise and was inside the room. It had a peculiar texture, which I couldn't identify as it was constantly moving like water. Then it became clear what it was, what it had to be, what was impossible, yet true. Spiders, thousands of them. They spread throughout the room, covering everything, and the sound of them was caused by them crawling all over each other. It was beyond comprehension. How had Anansi done this? Oh, I had no doubt of the cause of this now. Anansi had proven he was real, and he was now seeking revenge, and I was paying the price for my arrogance. I didn't think to scream. I just shuddered, uttered, "No, no, no, no," as shock took hold. I was pleading with Anansi to stop, but it must have sounded like further rejection. The spiders descended on their webs and landed on my body. I wanted to scream then, but I couldn't, as terror had paralysed me. I just lay in bed, helpless and shaking, as the spiders thronged over me, fangs sinking into my flesh and thin, hairy legs swarming into my silently shrieking mouth. So that's from my new book. So thank you for that. That's a bit of a horror, a bit of my general style. This other one is very different. This is, as we all know, in the middle of November, that as all the media and retail is telling us, it's Christmas. So on the Christmas theme, I have a story that I wrote last Christmas Eve. This was actually in retaliation to my parents guilt tripping me for not wanting to go home. Sort of like they couldn't be a couple left alone. So I wrote a story about a couple who were alone at Christmas. The old couple sat in silence, watching the flames of the fire as a harsh wind rattled the window panes. It was a dark and unwelcoming night, cold and unforgiving. The heat from the small fireplace barely gave enough warmth to keep the room from freezing. It was Christmas Eve, and the couple were all alone. Their lives had not always been like this. There had been Christmases filled with joy and laughter, Christmases with family, friends and loved ones. But over the years, things had begun to fade away. Their parents had passed, their children had grown up and moved away. Friendships changed and drifted. And over time, they saw less and less of the people they knew until it had just become the two of them. Together, but alone, and sat in silence, watching the flames of the fire as a harsh wind rattled the window panes. They barely spoke anymore. They didn't have to. Everything they needed to say to each other had been said. Every question asked and every answer given. They communicated by breath and the occasional glance. Words were habitual, but not necessary. A log shifted in the fireplace and the embers began to die. The couple looked at each other and there was a sigh as one of them said, "Your turn." The other sighed a response and slowly got out of their seat to put some more wood on the fire. A hard knocking was heard at the front door. The couple turned to each other. No guests were expected. Who could it be? The rapping continued. They stood together and approached the door with caution. They had a small window next to the door so they could see who was knocking. It was Mrs. Cole, their new neighbour from down the road. She was visibly upset and shaking, and once this was seen, they opened the door without hesitation and ushered her inside. Mrs. Cole was new to the area and only moved in a few weeks ago. She had some family, two young sons, a teenage daughter, and her partner, and clearly there was some trouble at home. She told them there had been an argument, which had included them all, and she had to get out of the house. The old couple could tell she needed respite, sanctuary, and above all, a sympathetic ear. They were unsure why they had been singled out for this dubious honour, but chosen them she had, and now she was here. Tea was dutifully poured, biscuits were brought, and Mrs. Cole talked. And talked. And talked. "Christmas is a very stressful time of year," she told them. "The expense of the food, booze and presents was getting bigger and bigger, and the kids were never happy. Plus, the price of cigarettes had just gone up, which were now costing her a small fortune since her daughter started stealing them." The old couple soon became privy to every indiscretion in the Cole household, including, what seemed to be, every single character flaw of every single family member. The constant selfish demands of the two greedy sons, the melodramatic rage of a daughter who craved understanding but refused to partake in conversation, and Mrs. Cole's partner, a man so weak and fearful of confrontation, you would have thought he was carved out of foam. As Mrs. Cole vocalised her frustrations, they grew, and grew, and grew, until the air turned as blue as sapphires, and the cheeks of the old couple turned as red as rubies. And still, Mrs. Cole talked. Time passed. A week, an eternity, 5 minutes, it was hard to say. But the conversation of glances that began between the elderly couple was the most articulate they had been in years. "How do we get this to stop?" asked a frown. "I don't know," exclaimed an eyebrow. "I'll do something," said a pursed lip. "Like what?" a sideways glance replied. Before they continued, they were interrupted by a ringing noise. Mrs. Cole apologised and took her phone out of her pocket. Nothing needed to be said. It was clearly her family calling, and her time out was over. She said some quick goodbyes, filled with meaningless phrases of thanks and well wishes, and then she was gone. The old couple closed the door and watched her walk back towards her house. She had reached about halfway when the teenage daughter opened the door and started screaming for cigarettes. The old couple looked at one another. There was nothing they could do. They'd played their part now, and the Coles would just have to sort it out for themselves. "We would just get in the way," the look said. The thing that the couple knew was that after a lifetime together, their flaws cancelled each other out. They were both far from perfect, but they accepted that in each other, because together they were something greater. A unit that protected itself from all the negativity in the world. A unit that made sense. A unit that was at peace. They looked down. At some point they'd begun holding hands. They smiled and gave each other a tight squeeze before returning to the living room. The old couple sat in silence, watching the flames of the fire as a harsh wind rattled the window panes. It was Christmas Eve and they were all alone. They were the happiest couple in the world. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tom. That's pretty much ensured I'll be afraid to go to bed tonight. What we normally do now is we have a short break so that people can go to the loo, refresh their glasses and so on and so forth. And in about like 5-10 minutes' time, we shall reconvene with Lucy Hanson.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.